Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R, in Juneau on the Mendenhall Glacier. This is M0HBR in downtown London. You're there, Mike.
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Well, good to hear you, Bill. How was your New Year's? I went to bed at 10:30 and was woken by the local firecrackers. That was the extent of my New Year's celebration there, over.
Well, Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Mike, and New Year here for Solder Smoke. Real good. Yeah, we tried to stay up till midnight in London, GMT time, but we actually bailed out. We cheated a little bit, and we celebrated on Madrid time, and we had the Madrid celebrations on the TV here. Madrid's an hour ahead of us, so it was 11 o'clock. The kids made it to, we figured the kids would make it to 11 o'clock, but they'd probably be snoozing by 12, so we did it with... We did it in another time zone, which was just as well. Go ahead.
Roger. Yeah, we went over to my kid's house and watched a little TV. I gave him a waffle iron, an $8 two-hole waffle iron, and he surprised me by making a waffle with gravy, and so that's what we had for New Year's dinner. So what's going on, Bill? How did your project go with your biasing spreadsheet there, over?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Great progress there, Mike. It was really good. I've been playing, as we discussed last time, with using just a simple spreadsheet to kind of model a simple broadband BJT amp. And what I did, I started out with this little oscillator circuit using ceramic resonators at about 14.3 megahertz. What I wanted to do was use the spreadsheet to design an amplifier and then see if I got all the parameters right in terms of the biasing, in terms of the load, the emitter resistor, the bias current, all that, and then see if I could take it and transfer it to the real world of Manhattan-style copper-clad boards. And I did just that, and it was really very, very gratifying, because I built the thing, and then I started doing the tests. And first, I tested for the bias voltages to see if the voltages at all the different, the DC voltages were as they should be, and they were exactly right on. I also knew that things were going well when I looked up at the power supply, and I saw that the circuit was drawing about 40 milliamps, which was exactly the kind of the no signal condition predicted by the model. So that was a real hoot. But then I connected the oscillator and put a signal into it, and it was really great, because it got it was clearly amplifying, and it was clearly linear and not distorting and everything else. So it was one of those moments where theory agrees with the real circuit, and It was great. So a big moment here at the M0HBR workbench. Go ahead.
All right, Bill. That's great. You know, I've had a couple of those moments. Some of them can be really good, where your backlight's on fire and your hair stands on end. I don't suppose it was that good, but that's really great. You spent a little bit of time getting ready, and it's always cool when the plan comes together there. I tried your spreadsheet, and the thing that I was doing is I was using a common emitter type of amp, and you know, I was getting the signal off the emitter, and I kind of think you're getting the signal maybe off the collector. I don't know. I never really saw a schematic of the circuit you were working with, so the numbers I was getting were a little odd. So I did go back and try LTSpice that linear technology spice, and played around with it. I made one circuit and failed, and then I made another one here that uses a two transistor circuit, and it modeled pretty well. It was a circuit that I found out there that that was for a 2N2222 MMIC amp. If you do a search for MMIC amp and MPSA 2222, you'll see the one I went at. And so I sent you a copy of that schematic, and then I put it into LTSpice and ran it and ran some changes of different values. And so that was pretty happy about that. I did some other reading. I found there's a guy out there that has popcorn QRP circuits, and he had a bunch of stuff on biasing. New ARRL 2006 handbook, and the last handbook I had was when I got out of college. It was an 82 handbook, and this one, the new 2006 one, had some pretty clear transistor biasing stuff in it. It was a really good handbook. I recommend it pretty highly there. Remember I was telling you about the curve tracers and the load lines? All that stuff was coming back reading these things. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Real fine, Mike. Well, looking at the circuit that you sent me, and let me see here. All right, there we go. You got basically an emitter follower after it, and you've got shunt feedback also. Shunt feedback's a little bit, I haven't quite gotten to shunt feedback yet, but that's one of the circuits. The circuit that you have there is essentially one of the circuits that that they use in solid state design for the radio amateur when they get to the point of discussing shunt feedback and the emitter follower circuit. The circuit there, I'm still a little not quite as advanced. The circuit that I modeled that you were looking at on the spreadsheet, it's a standard common emitter BJT amp, and yeah, the output is taken. It's off the collector. I'll have to send you the schematic. It's real simple, but you'll see better what I'm talking about with the schematic. Nick Kennedy very kindly sent an email in response to the last issue of Solder Smoke, and he shared our frustrations with the spice models. I had mentioned that I found PSpice very frustrating. He said he had similar experiences, but really liked LTSpice. And I have LTSpice here on the computer, and now, based on his input and yours, I'm going to see if I can model this thing on LTSpice. Now, if I get all frustrated, I'm going to blame you guys, but we'll give it a shot, because it would be fun to be able to play with it on the circuit simulator. What else? Yeah, I've tried to expand on the spreadsheet software a little bit now, and I've come up with another model that includes the feedback in the emitter circuit, what they call degenerative feedback, and it's been a real learning process for me, because I've gone through it a few times, and now I have a deeper understanding of how it works and how it affects the output of the transistor amplifier, and it's been a real learning process for me. I still rely on solid state design for radio amateur, and I think that's been my real guide in this, and what a wonderful book that is. My copy is just about worn out. it's starting to fall apart. The pages are yellow. I've been using it since about 1993, and it's lived through the Dominican Republic, the Azores Islands of Portugal, a tour in Washington, and now it's here in London. So I'm hoping that they come out with a new edition, or else we'll have to be buying these things for high prices on eBay. Fine on your new handbook. Yeah, it's time for me to get one, too. My latest edition here is 1993, and I think the world has moved on quite a bit. That sounds like you got a good Christmas present there. I got a radio book, too, that I want to mention. Technical Topics. It's a compilation of columns written for the UK version of QST, Radcom, and it's written by Pat Hawker, G3VA. He's been writing this thing for about 40 years, and it's a real treasure. And they put out compilations every 5 years, and my wife got me the latest edition. So that was my Christmas time edition to the amateur electronic engineering library here, KL7R, M0HBR.
Okay, Bill. Mine says 1977 in the copyright, and I know I was using this thing when I was in school. So it had to be before 80, probably a 79 or 80 when I got it. So mine is yellowed, and I have a couple of heartbreaking tears on well-used pages, and it's dog-eared. I've used the heck out of my solid-state design book. It cost me $7. That's what it says, $7 for solid-state design. It cost me $39 for a handbook, and it was something like $50 for the experimental method. So our money is becoming devalued by that amount over those few years. Well, cool. I did not, as far as the degeneration and the feedback and stuff like that, I basically just entered the circuit into SPICE and played with it. I was just wondering to see if it was linear, you know. And I ran it through, and SPICE said it was linear, and I cranked the drive up in SPICE and to see what when it would start clipping. And I tried experimenting with changing the emitter resistor, and there was no change at all. So clearly it acts differently than the other amps I played with, so I'll have to spend some time trying to understand that MMIC amp using the MPSA 2222s. Let's see, fine on technical topics. I was going to tell you about a couple of magazines that I'd run across. Circuit Seller magazine has a bunch of good articles. You can spend a buck and a half to get them reprinted through PayPal. You enter PayPal, and a buck and a half gets charged to PayPal, and you get these articles that are pretty cool. There's a Electronica magazine or something like that in England that has some really cool articles. That's an EDN magazine. Anyway, those were a couple things I wanted to mention at some point, and this seems to be a good point. Well, cool. What else have I been working on over here? I told you I built that PIC-based frequency counter from OM3CPH. Well, I put it in a box, and I put a new display on it. I got a little tiny display, and it had this ribbon cable coming out of the LCD display, and I thought, well, I'll just unsolder that and just solder right to the pins where this little ribbon tape was. And I creamed a couple pads on the LCD display, so I was in there scratching on this micro fine circuit board traces and then soldering wire wrap wire, you know, thinner than a human hair to this trace. And anyway, I got it all wired up. I got my counter all working, and I got a couple divide by 10 prescalers, and I put a divide by 10 prescaler on it, so my 0 to 50 meg PIC-based counter is now a 0 to 500 meg, so I'm real happy about that. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Well, I've got a bit of a frog in my throat here this morning. It's early in London. I don't know if our listeners realize the time factor that we're working on. Let's see, I'm looking here. My system shows that it's 20, I guess, almost 11 o'clock your time, 11 o'clock at night, and I'm operating here at 7:55 a.m. in the morning. I'm here on my second cup of coffee, so we're time shifted here and globe spanning on solder smoke, which I think is one of the things that makes it fun. Yeah, you mentioned your counter project. Very interesting. It just called to mind. I just got the January issue of QST. And on the very good column, the hands-on radio column, experiment number 36 is the up-down counter. and he goes and gives counter basics and everything else. I really like this guy's articles. Does a great job, and it's put out by Ward Silver, N0AX. And I'm going to have to read through this thing to get myself a little bit digitized. As you know, I'm very analog here, but willing to learn, as I say. So take a look at that. The other interesting article in QST was an article on really old time radio called A Short History of Radio Transmitters by Robert Schrader, W6BNB. I thought it was quite good. I've got to go through it in more detail, but it gives a description of how the old spark transmitters and those things work. You mentioned the price that you paid for solid state design. I checked on mine. I paid $12 for mine, so I got mine a little bit later than yours. And but you're right, the prices are rising. Electronica, I've seen it. I've seen Electronica. It kind of reminds me of Nuts and Volts, and I really like those magazines. It's a shame that the ham radio magazines are becoming less technical. It's almost as if the technical content is shifting into other magazines, and Electronica and Nuts and Volts are certainly in that category. I've also become quite a fan of some of the online publications. You and I have discussed Hackaday. I'm a real Hackaday addict. I have to have my visit to Hackaday every morning, and some of the projects that guy comes up with are really wonderful. I'm glad that Solder Smoke has been featured on that site. And I'm also now a slash dot reader. You know, news for nerds, stuff that matters. I get a kick out of that. And the Wired is online, and Wired comes up with some great stuff. But also the publications. So we'll find on the pickle board and the frequency counter. And it sounds like you've been generating quite a bit of solder smoke there over the holidays, Mike. That's great. I think my next effort is going to be another stage of amplifier for the what's evolving into a 20-meter phone DSV rig. This thing has just really begun as a kind of a tutorial, practical exercise on amplifier design. But since the oscillator is running at around 14.3 megahertz, it seems like a natural to turn this thing into a yet another 20-meter DSB transmitter. The difference would be that this one would be completely of my design, which I'm finding very, 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 very rewarding. Back to you, KL7R in Juneau, M0HBR London.
That's awesome, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R. Yeah, I kind of got stuck on that myself. Adding another stage. When I built the little 2N2222 amp, I couldn't figure out how to make it generate more watts. And I dropped the emitter resistor, and then the thing would start square waving on me. So then what do? You add another stage of class A. Do you add a bigger transistor and able to throw more current around and then get more power? What I needed to be able to do was drive the SBL1s, which is a diode ring mixer, and that needs something like +7 or +10 dBm, which is, I don't know, I got to look up table over here, but you know that's what is it, plus 7 dBm is like 5 milliwatts, and so I'm kind of close there with just that little two transistor thing. But I think I need another one, I'm going to have to learn something in order to be able to design that, because the output of my DDS amp is 3 volts, so I'm going to have to drop it down to be low enough drive for. In order to be able to drive like 20 millivolts and then get the output back up again to 3 volts. Just kind of a learning thing there. Anyway, so back to you, Bill. Tell me something new about adding another stage. I don't know how to do that. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, it's a challenge, and that's what I'm playing with now, and that's why that's where the feedback mechanisms, that either shunt and or degenerative emitter feedback, becomes important, because that gives you the opportunity to really control the amount of gain in the stage and also control the input and output impedances. And so, yeah, you have to, it becomes a problem, and you have to be able to, sometimes you'll actually have too much with a given beta. If you don't have any feedback in there, as far as I understand it, with a given beta, when you go to the next stage, you'll be overdriving it, unless you can somehow reduce the stage gain while keeping the whole thing linear. So there's a bunch of different parameters that you play with, and a couple of the very important tools, one of the very important tools is feedback, and you really have to know how to use that, and you need to know what's going on with the feedback and how it affects voltage and current gain, and also how it affects the input and output impedances. So it gets a little bit more complicated. And I think I've gotten to fully understand what's going on with the degenerative feedback in the emitter, and that involves leaving some of the emitter resistance unbypassed. That's the critical thing, and that reduces the stage gain. You need to know by how much. You need to know how it affects the voltage swing on the collector, and you have to watch to make sure that you're not getting down. Either you're not getting into either saturation or cutoff on either end of the voltage swing of the signal. So that's what it comes down to. But solid state design, you have to read those initial chapters. I did anyway. I had to read through them many times before I started to get a picture of what was going on. But I'm now using that kind of mental picture and putting it into this spreadsheet, and then it makes it a whole lot easier to quickly manipulate the data. And when you have it on the spreadsheet, you just go in there and change a few numbers, and you change all the parameters, and you can see how everything fits together. But I'm getting there, and maybe that'll be a topic for the next episode, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. In the meantime, I'll send you the spreadsheets, and we can discuss it, and hopefully that'll be useful. It's always easier to have the thing in front of you instead of just hearing me try to talk about it. Hey, before we wrap it up, I just want to talk about a couple of other technical things that have come up as a result of Christmas that was fun. I've gotten into the fascinating world of burning my own DVDs. My mother-in-law is in the Dominican Republic and desperately wants a video of the kids and our life here in London. So we got a new digital Sony digital video camera, but I needed to kind of figure out how to take that those digital AVI files and then turn them into real DVDs that you could pop into the into a DVD player and play them. And it took me a while, but I finally cracked the code and got all the necessary software going, so now I can produce and edit my own digital video programs. Which is great, great fun. Although it wasn't fun learning it, but we got that figured out. And I also entered into the fascinating world of MP3 file downloads, because my wife got an MP3 player, and that's been fun too. So I've become a member of Napster, and now for 75 British pence can download songs and put them into her. Not her iPod, but she has a Moovo, very, very tiny, tiny little thing. This whole thing, it's amazing technology, Mike. It's her MP3 player is no bigger than my thumb, and it holds 500 megs of data, Each song's about 5 to 8 megs, and real easy to put the stuff in there. It also holds, it, the thing also has a voice recorder and an FM radio in there, and the sound quality is just phenomenal. It's really great. Amazing technology, and so I'm now anxious to get one myself so I can listen to, well, not to Solder Smoke, but to, I'll know what's in it, but to other programs and music while walking to work through the streets of London. KL7R and 0HBR.
Yeah, I'm 0HBR, KL7R. Well, cool. Yeah, I was kind of looking, you know, at early MP3 days, and they had guys out there that were you know, interfacing their own hard drives and building their own MP3 players that they could put in a car and stuff like that. Yeah, they're getting really small. I've got one that's basically a USB drive, and it's an MP3 player, and it's just amazing. I saw yesterday or the day before, and I can't remember where, but I saw an MP3 player in a Pez dispenser. There's a company out there making an MP3 player that is in the shape of a Pez dispenser, and they're trying really hard to be true to the Pez design. That's crazy. I kind of stopped doing the Napster thing there when they started suing everybody. So I haven't done that in some time now. So that's interesting that you're doing that. I've done some ripping of my own CDs and put them out there, and that's really nice. You can put a whole you can put like half a dozen albums or more on a CD-ROM, and that's pretty nice. Okay, Bill. Well, I guess I'm kind of winding down for today. I'll talk to you next time if you don't have something else you want to add there. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R and 0HBR. Okay, Mike, real good. Yeah, the MP3 in the car. Well, yeah, we solved that problem. We've been thinking about upgrading our car's audio system. It's kind of ancient and cassette based. Gosh, the car's about 5 years old, but it shows you how fast technology's moved. But we don't really have to do that. We bought one of these little things where you pop it into the cassette deck and just provides an audio input. So we just pop that thing in there. It costs about $5. And hook up the MP3, my wife's MP3 player, when we get in the car, and it sounds great. So that took care of that. Finally, the MP3 and the Pez dispenser. Well, yeah, I guess they're going to be putting them in wristwatches and everything else pretty soon. I want to get I think my next move is going to be the cell phone with the camera and the MP3 player in it. So I just have to throw one thing in my pocket as I walk out of the house in the morning. Yeah, Napster. I think Napster is legit now. I hope it is. Anyway, I'm not downloading anything for free. I'm paying for it. So, we'll put it that way. I think it's a legit operation now. Yeah. Okay. I think it's time to wrap up another edition of Solder Smoke. I have a sound effect here that I've been dying to use. I meant to move my kid's gong in here, but to make sound effects like when we introduce listener mailbag or anything else, but I figured that my lamp over the desk here will do it, so how's that for an audio effect? We'll have to make use of that. I just wrapped my pen on the overhead lamp here. All right. Well, again, Happy New Year. Glad to do the first Solder Smoke of 2006. Ask all our listeners to please send us some feedback. You can send it to n2cqr@yahoo.com. And we'll be happy to hear from you. And thanks for listening. We are getting quite a few listeners out there, Mike. And I think we had over 700 downloads on Solder Smoke 12. So that's very gratifying. I'm glad people are listening. 7-3, Mike. And we'll talk to you again real soon. KL7R, Juno, M0HBR, London, 7-3.